Sustain 267.
Welcome to the Sustain 267 podcast, where we host conversations on different issues affecting climate change in Botswana and the rest of Africa. I am your host, Batukile Sitse. If you're on social media, you've probably come across invitations to sign petitions quite frequently. Petitions for everything, from putting cameras on public transport for safety to demanding governments act on climate, and even one on freeing a banana, the fruit. After all the petitions that I've signed and shared, I couldn't help but wonder if they're actually useful and create impact. That's why today we'll be talking about petitions. What are they? What purpose do they serve? And how to make a petition successful? First, I spoke to Lesego Ntshunga, a human rights lawyer with a passion for documentation. She also does consultancy work for various entities aimed at research and analysis on Botswana's current social status. She has an interest in gender-based violence response and is a child rights advocate, sitting on the boards of Women Against Rape, Childline Trust Botswana, and the Voice of Child Trust. The very first question I had for her, before I start, I recorded this with the windows open, and if you listen really carefully, you'll hear the bird singing beautifully in the background. Back to the conversation I had with Lesego, to get us all on the same page, the first thing I asked her was, what is a petition?
Cool. A petition is a request, essentially. You're asking somebody for something to happen, or you're asking somebody for permission for something, or you're asking somebody to do something. So it's essentially a request. It's an ask. It's as simple as that.
There seems to be a lot of weight on it as compared to, Lesego, may you please pass me the glass if I'm going to petition you. Is there a difference between just a simple, may you please do this, and a petition?
Yeah, I think the difference is that the main difference is who petitions are addressed to. So a request to pass a glass is a request, like a social, it's a more casual request, right? Whereas a petition is usually aimed at or directed to a government facility or institution, or it's aimed at a larger community, or it's aimed at a ministry. So essentially the audience of the petition, or the subject rather of the petition, is much more, well, defines the petition a lot more than a basic request, I would say.
So it's not legally binding?
No, it's not at all. It's not legally binding at all.
I've seen quite a number of online petitions, and from what you're saying now, so there wouldn't be a difference between an online petition and a physical petition?
Yeah. The only difference would be, or the main difference, not the only difference, one of the main differences between an online petition and those petitions which are done on a personal, I think, well, maybe not even personal level, but like at a person-to-person level, would be that the reach of an online petition is much wider. It's much broader. It reaches a much wider audience, whereas a person-to-person petition reaches as many people as you encounter as the petitioner. So I would say the main difference would be the audience which it reaches, or the people who it reaches, than the actual substance of the petition. But in terms of, I don't even want to say legalities, in terms of politics, it's neither weightier nor less weighty, essentially.
And then do they work? Do petitions work? Have you seen them work?
I want to say yes and I want to say no. There are instances where petitions have worked. There are many instances where they have just not worked. I think the main thing and the main theme that the main thing I want us to leave this conversation with is the first thing that has to be established is the intention behind the petition, right? So sometimes you can do a petition where you are requesting people to do something, but you know they won't do it just because of, you know, social justice issues, for example, where last year in Botswana, civil society made a petition for the then minister of the minister who operates the ministry which oversees the Department of Gender to step down, or for government to essentially have him removed from his seat because of the history that had come out that he had battered his wife previously, right? So civil society made the petition that he be removed. I think, yes, there were people who were expecting that he will be removed. But I think largely and more practically, what we were trying to do as civil society was to essentially highlight to government that there is a certain integrity that should come with leadership. And we are aware that those people who are in our leadership don't come with that integrity that we would expect of them. So it was more awareness raising. It was more to communicate to government that, listen, you guys need to put your house in order. So in terms of that, it was quite effective. In terms of having him removed, I mean, we all know he was not removed immediately, at least. He was removed later on during a parliament reshuffle, right? But there are also petitions which, so I guess at the end of the day, it's about what the intention of the petition is. The most successful petitions that I've seen have been those for awareness raising, where you're trying to garner support of a lot of people or backing of a lot of people. Because let's face it, a lot of petitions are aimed at government officials. Government officials are political persons. Political persons are driven by the numbers of people behind whatever cause that you have. One of the most successful petitions that we had that we had in our country was from, is it early 2019, the Zinedine Case petition, where a young girl had been raped in 2018, and the way in which her case was going was in the way that rape cases go normally in Botswana, where, you know, essentially the police officers are dragging their feet. The case is going to take a long time. Nobody's doing anything. Nobody's communicating to the complainant. You know, cases are essentially just piling up kind of on somebody's table. And the petition was for the police to start taking action. And immediately after that case, the police started taking action to the extent that the matter is about to be concluded within a period of about just over a year, you know. And we know that in our country, that is very unusual for any types of cases, right? Recently, there was a petition that was put together by the Child Rights Network, the Botswana Child Rights Network, for a member of parliament, Paulson Majaha, a member of parliament for Nataguta, who is implicated in a defilement matter. The network petitioned for parliament to encourage him to step down from his position while the matter is ongoing, right? What that did was that it countered. So Majaha before then had been speaking very boisterously, very aggressively, you know, for his constituency. There were a lot of people who were now coming against the young girl who is the complainant in the defilement case to say, you know, why are you saying this about this man who seems to be really caring about his constituency, who seems really concerned about his people? So what the Child Rights Network did was that with their petition, sure, there was the expectation that, or there was the hope that he would step down, and or that parliament or his colleagues, rather his peers, would request him or advise him, right, accordingly. And they didn't. But what it did was that it countered his initial boisterous, intimidating position. And it said, there are those of us who actually care about this girl, and we will stand with her, whether we do so successfully, and I'll put that successfully in inverted commas, or not, right? So the success in that is that it extended a position that was an alternative, right? And it showed like a different perspective. So for me, to that extent, yes, petitions have been successful. There have also been petitions which, you know, just kind of happened and kind of went up into the air and didn't really work as well as they could have been, they could have worked. I think the most successful petitions that we've had have been directed to either parliament or a member of parliament, right? We had a recent incident where the current minister of gender made a statement that gender-based violence is something that is not urgent, right? And there was a petition that was made for her to remove herself or to have herself removed from the ministry, and she didn't. I think the shortcoming, not even a shortcoming, but I think what happened with that petition is that it was directed at her, but I think it was for a certain constituency of an audience, right, of the larger audience, and therefore its reach, I don't think, was to the extent that it could have been, right? As opposed to, for example, the petition that was done by the I Shall Not Forget movement about four years ago, right? Which has ended up in the sex offenders registry, right? Which the president was making us promises this past Friday that it would, yeah, promises. But he made promises that it would be tabled at Parliament in the next session in November. So I think the success of a petition is one in its intention, and secondly, finally, in who it's aimed at. I've said a mouthful.
Well, I didn't stop you because you were saying everything that I was going to ask, and even the examples that you were citing. And then what I picked up across the different examples that you gave was that it's not necessarily the primary reason that you put on the petition that matters. Yeah. Sometimes getting the secondary is good enough. And sometimes the secondary, which is not necessarily on there, is what you are aiming for. But you did speak about how some of them had positive results, and then some of them have just kind of, you know, disappeared into thin air. What would you say are the main things that if someone's going to launch a petition or write a petition to someone, what would you say are the important factors that they should pay attention to try and ensure better chances of success?
Yeah. I think I already kind of mentioned them earlier, but I think, first of all, figure out who your audience is, right? And secondly, who are you petitioning? And finally, what is it that you think your petition will achieve? And if it doesn't achieve that, what can it possibly achieve beyond just what you've intended? So your audience are the people who you are hoping would become co-petitioners with you, right? Are you hoping that it would reach a certain audience? Are you hoping that it would reach a certain constituency? Are the people that you are hoping to reach people with influence, people with access, right, to the higher echelons of political power? Are you hoping that it would reach people within social influence or influence at grassroots and community level? So that's your audience. That's the first thing. The second thing, who are you writing the petition to? Who are you petitioning? And if you are petitioning somebody, make sure that one way or the other, that petition reaches them and reaches them publicly. So reaches them in a way that they are aware that it reached them, that the public is aware that it reached them, because then they are forced to respond one way or the other, right? I mean, one of the successes that we saw with the BCRN, the Botswana Child Rights Network petition, was that sure, Majaha did not step down, but we had the president make a statement and make certain commitments in terms of, you know, as regards gender-based violence, right? Which was quite out of the ordinary because usually he waits for the 16 days, right? And then finally, what are the intentions of your petition? And what are the, like you were saying, the secondary benefits of the petition? What are the things that you think can be derived or derived from your petition? What's the English word? I don't know. What are the secondary things that could fall from your petition?
So maybe your lower hanging fruits. If you want,
exactly.
Getting them out of parliament is the bigger, you know, star at the top of the Christmas tree. What's the lower hanging?
Sure, exactly. So if you think about them in that way, I think then what I would then argue is that to that extent, every petition that reaches an audience beyond just its author becomes successful. Because I think that with every petition, that one of the lower hanging fruits would be raising awareness. So bringing into your circle or bringing into knowledge people who were not necessarily in the know of the issues that you are raising within that petition.
For most of our conversation so far, we've spoken about politicians and politics. And then if we take it to the private sector, I know that within the environmental sphere, most of the people who are burning the world are corporations. About 100 corporations are doing most of the damage to Earth. Have petitions worked in this area? It doesn't necessarily have to relate to environmental causes, but do petitions work here?
To be honest with you, Pato, I am not, like, I have very, very entry-level knowledge of environmental petitions. But what I would say is that people, so the government and politicians give access to the private sector to do what they do because the private sector funds politicians, right? So they work together. So, I mean, my thing is always this, is that lobbying is the most effective resource or tool in any regard. So I think if there's going to be, if an environmental petition is going to be successful, you have to lobby the people at the top who are deciding that the private companies can do certain things. The private companies are given the permission, what are they called? I mean, they have to, for example, submit environmental impact assessments, right? Reports. They have to submit certain things. And those things are submitted to government. And it's government at the end of the day, which then makes the decision of whether or not to allow them.
What I was asking more was just private companies. Do they work with just private companies? Even if a private company is doing non-environmental, but
I think it depends who you target. If you target the private company, they'll have no reason to act. I mean, we had a movement recently. It wasn't a petition per se, but we had a movement recently that had to do with persons who are Botswana but are not indigenous Botswana, and there was just like great silence until the movement kind of died out, right? But I think where the petition is targeted to somebody who is in a position of leadership and a kind of leadership that needs the public, it makes it more successful or more likely to succeed, right? So if, for example, you're targeting companies that produce chickens, there's a ministry that... there's a ministry that governs those companies. So instead of writing a petition to the chicken companies, write the petition to the ministry, because we know that a ministerial position is a political position and those people have to act on the bidding of the people. So the private company has, I mean, they have no business talking to you. They're there to make money. That's the way capitalism works, right? But the people who give them the permission to carry out their work, which is the people at ministerial level, they have to have our best interests at heart.
Thank you for that response. Makes a lot of sense. So don't speak to the other people, speak to your employees that you employed to be in office and have your best interest. Lesora, thank you so much.
This week we have a treat of two guests. With our next guest, we zoom in on petitions within the environmental movement. I speak to campaign specialist for 350.org, Ahmed Mokgopo, who leads on calls to end public financial support for fossil fuel projects. Ahmed holds an MA in international development from the University of Sussex and believes that climate change is said to be Africa's most serious social and economic threat. By shifting money away from the fossil fuel sector, accelerating a just transition, and investing in renewable energy, he believes we can afford large-scale climate disruption and has been involved in petitions to this effect.
Ahmed, thank you so much for speaking to me. My first question for you, which is something that I've thought about a lot as people share petitions with me online on my Twitter and so forth. Do petitions work within the environmental movement?
Yeah, so petitions in the general sense, it depends on the goal and objective of the petition. I think petitions are great to engage people and to engage your audience and to really, gather support to put pressure on your target. So they are a great engagement tool. But in terms of whether, your target or the individual or institution that's been targeted through the petition, whether petitions help shift that person in the direction that campaigners and activists want them to move towards, it's a much harder sort of story to tell around whether they are effective in that sense. But they are a great way to engage audiences and to also, in terms of like that petition delivery, to really engage your target and to really show them that there are large numbers of people that are supporting your campaign and that it's not an isolated campaign happening between the organization running the petition and the institutional organization that they're targeting. So in a nutshell, great for engagement, but much harder to measure in terms of whether they affect any change or impact at the target institution.
I know you've worked on a couple of petitions. Do you mind mentioning some of them? If you could also highlight the one that you feel was most successful and one that you feel like you could have taken further.
Sure. So I think you know, with the two petitions that I've petition campaigns that I've worked on in the past, we have had a decent amount of success in those petitions. The first one was in 2017, targeting the city of Cape Town. We were asking the city at 350.org to make a commitment to divest from fossil fuel assets. And, you know, in delivering the petition and getting thousands of people to sign onto it, we were able to convince the city to come out with a commitment to divest from fossil fuels. And it was about 2 months after we delivered that petition that the city of Cape Town ended up coming out with a commitment to divest from fossil fuels. The other petition that I've worked on quite extensively was targeting the Development Bank of Southern Africa. And we were asking the Development Bank to make a commitment not to finance the Tabametsi coal-fired power plant in South Africa. We got roughly in the space of, like, I think it was 2 months, we got roughly 8,000 signatures that supported that that petition. What we ended up seeing in terms of, like, the DBSA is that there was a strong sense that it wouldn't be a good idea for the bank to finance the Tabametsi coal-fired power plant. The bank, or at least the project, reached financial close. Well, it reached the deadline for financial close, but didn't have all the finances that it needed to carry on. So it meant that there was a lapse in the mandate for various financial institutions to finance the project. And so what ended up happening was that the DBSA did not end up financing the project. The project is still on ice at the moment because of massive delays due to litigation and community mobilizations. How we measured success in that instance is that we have seen a change in rhetoric from the DBSA, where they are more and more talking, or at least trying to center climate change into their strategy and into their thinking. And, you know, while they are still susceptible to financing fossil fuel projects like coal and gas, it was good to see that the pressure that we were able to put on them, both through the petition and through various other campaigning initiatives, we were able to really see that the bank is more and more looking at trying to center climate change into their thinking and strategies, and really looking at their role in terms of combating climate change.
Those sound like some big successes. You got a commitment to divest from the city of Cape Town when you asked them to. You got a project to struggle with funding when you guys appealed to it. So those are some pretty tangible successes and definitely put up a strong case for petitions. So considering your experience with having some pretty successful petitions, what would you say are some of the best practices to increase chances of success, however one may measure it, with petitions within the environmental movement? So if you wanted your project to be more successful, what would you be looking to do?
I think, you know, before setting up a petition, because it's a time-bound campaign, organizers of the petition have got to be clear around when they would like to end the petition, as well as also how they would like to deliver the petition or ensure that their petition reaches the target institution. I think just having those basics in place before running with a petition is quite important. Another thing is that, you know, initially when you put up a petition on a web platform, they generally do generate a lot of, like, engagement engagement because, you know, when you put out a new campaign, you have like a solid social media strategy to really drive traffic towards the petition webpage. But in order to generate, you know, to sustain engagement and ensure that you can reach the high level of numbers that you set out for yourself, you really want to ensure that you have a solid social media strategy and a way to kind of like to market it, or at least to spotlight the existence of the petition. I think really just having a solid digital strategy around generating or getting traffic towards the petition site is crucial to really get those high numbers that people generally seek when they run petitions.
Yeah, so you don't want like a sparkle and fizzle. You want to keep it, if it's going to be 6 months, you want to be getting those high numbers over your 6 months.
Yeah, you really want to be encouraging people to really come onto the site, and so really trying to find ways to generate traffic to the site is crucial over 6 months or however long the petition runs.
Another petition that I know of that 350 Africa was involved in was one on the 24th of May 2019, which was declared the global climate strike day, getting tongue twisted there, and on the eve of Africa Day, where Africa Climate Reality Project and 350africa.org took the fossil free movement to the African Development Bank Group offices in South Africa to deliver the zero emissions petitions. I know that they received it, and it was a coalition campaign that wanted the Africa Development Bank to publicly commit to 100% renewable energy investment in the bank's power lending portfolio. Additionally, the call was also for an improvement in the bank's transparency policies around disclosure and access to information, operational management, carbon pricing, the energy efficiency strategy, and greenhouse gases emissions accounting at the project and portfolio level. I saw that they received it. I also saw that they wrote a response for it. So that was about a year ago now. When they responded, what they wrote to me, it didn't look like they were saying anything new. They were basically reiterating policies that they already had in place and promised to basically crank them up, bring them into effect. Have you seen any of what was written in their response to the petition come to be?
Sure. So just in terms of some of the commitments that the African Development Bank have made is that they have come out with a policy around coal, where what it seems like is that they would normally not consider financing any coal-fired projects or coal projects unless deemed absolutely necessary. And that's something that, you know, campaigners and the environmental movement is completely against. You know, the zero emissions campaign was really about getting the African Development Bank, in terms of its energy lending portfolio, to really commit to 100% renewable energy and not to support any fossil fuel projects. So to really answer your question, while they have made some slight shift in the right direction in terms of coal, they are involved in other fossil fuel projects across the continent via oil and gas, which is definitely not the way for a development finance institution to go. They have a role and a mandate to provide infrastructure projects that realize economic development goals within African nation states. And by investing or having a policy or having the space to continue financing fossil fuel projects, they're in essence financing pollution, they're driving the climate crisis, and they're not acting on a solid sustainable development mandate. You know, they're not promoting sustainable development, but in actual fact are really driving climate disruption through their continued support for other fossil fuels, mainly oil and gas, which is which is where a large part of their portfolio is going. And that's not to say that they're not doing any renewable energy projects. They definitely are doing that, which we definitely welcome. But those great initiatives in terms of renewable energy will always be tainted by their continued exposure to oil and gas.
Yeah, when I saw the "they will only invest when deemed necessary," I'm like, but is there an investment that's unnecessary? It's such an easy line to cross, and it's not really something that you can say. You can't really use it as a restriction of only when it's necessary. They'll be like, but electricity is necessary for people, thus we must invest. And then the last question, this is usually a question that I close with as a call to action. How can the general public help beyond just signing the petitions? Because this one, the obvious one would be they can sign.
Sure. So with 350.org, we're a global grassroots organization really trying to support community-based organizations and organizations at the grassroots level to take action on climate change. And we're always really encouraging people to organize around, taking action on climate change in their communities and, you know, to really push back against any new fossil fuel projects that may that are proposed in their areas. So people can definitely, you know, take action by beginning to organize from their home base, from their own communities, you know, bring together friends, family, neighbors to begin discussing, you know, how climate change may be impacting your community, really begin to start engaging with like your local government around climate change and what they may or may not be doing around the crisis. And I'm really umming a lot here, but really what I'm trying to say is that we encourage distributed action on climate change from the grassroots level. So if people can organize themselves within their communities, that is a great way to be a part of the environmental movement. It's also a great way to connect with climate change organizations at the national and international level and to really profile all that may be wrong with fossil fuel projects in your area. It really is about trying to get everybody involved in as many ways as possible. Petitions and digital engagement are one way to get involved. But if folks have the capacity to start organizing on the ground and getting their neighbors and family together to really push back against climate injustice, that's something that is fully and totally encouraged by 350.org and many, many other organizations across the continent.
All right. And on that note of do what you can, Ahmed, thank you so much for speaking to me.
And there you have it. It seems, yes, petitions do work. So do your part by adding your name whenever you come across one that you truly believe in. I'll be sharing the links to the petitions mentioned by Lesego and Ahmed in case you'd be interested in learning a bit more about them. Thank you for taking time to listen to this episode of Sustain 267 Podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast so you get an alert every time we put out new episodes. Also, please rate us to make the Sustain 267 Podcast easier to find for new listeners. The Sustain 267 Podcast is supported by our lovely patrons. If you don't know what Patreon is, basically it's a platform where you can support creatives to create content such as this podcast. I've chosen this platform instead of seeking a sponsorship because I feel this way it won't compromise the kind of conversations I can have on the Sustain 267 Podcast platform. So if you appreciate the Sustain 267 Podcast and have learned anything from it, please become a patron from as little as $3 a month. The link is in the show notes. Shout out to our new patron, Hofa Nemudise, for supporting the work that we do. I am the host of Sustain 267 Podcast, Batukilisise, and the sound engineer is Maleho Makoti. Like our Facebook page, Sustain 267, we will also be sharing this episode and continuing the conversation. Please share your thoughts on petitions. Do you believe they work? I'm currently running a survey on my Twitter asking people if they believe that petitions do work. As I'm recording this, the results reflect 25% of people believe petitions work, while 75% believe they don't. The final results, please check out my Twitter. My handle is @IAM_Batuke. As we draw to the close of today's episode, once again, the COVID-19 pandemic is still on and gaining momentum in Botswana and across Africa. Globally, lives are being lost. Let's continue to follow regulations so we and our loved ones stay safe. Take care.